seems like Europe is afraid of winter, which is almost laughable in this day and age, given that the EU is, by all accounts, a fully modernized and developed group of countries. Just days after Europeans breathed a sigh of relief that Russian gas giant Gazprom announced that it would resume supplies through the Nord Stream 1 pipeline, it had actually announced that flows would be reduced yet again. So where does that put Europe this winter? I'm Christy I, and you're watching The Cost of Everything, where today we'll be breaking down the true cost of winters for Europeans amidst this tense political backdrop and what this means for the average citizen. Germany is the EU's largest economy and traditional growth driver, and it's particularly reliant on Russian gas. The government is now concerned about how it will keep the lights on over the winter, and it's working on a plan to reduce gas consumption, noting that gas for industries will be reduced before private residences or critical infrastructure such as hospitals. The EU had previously received around 45% of its annual supplies from Russia. And while it's desperately seeking alternatives, it cannot replace Russian gas fast enough ahead of the winter. Rationing natural gas can only do so much. Coupled with the rising prices of energy and slowing production, the EU is now teetering on the edge of serious economic pain in the near term that could push it into a recession. So for Europe, it really does look like winter is coming. And now, in search of alternatives to heating with gas, the EU countries are increasingly turning to wood. Wood-burning stoves are subsidized by the government, but experts warn of serious health repercussions. And to help us break it down further on how the cost of winter will be affecting European residents, let's bring in David Towell, the founder of ProChain Capital. So, David, how much more will it cost the average citizen to heat their homes this winter? Is this the double-edged sword of all the European sanctions on Russia?
So this winter, is going to be incredibly challenging to Europeans continent-wide. Certain countries are going to be worse off because of the hard line that they're very much taking with Russia. Other countries that have gotten a little bit more flexibility with respect to taking in Russian natural gas are going to be hit less hard. But nevertheless, it is going to be a winter full of pain. For many Europeans, they will see double, if not triple, the price of heating. And the primary issue may not even be cost. It may be rationing. There may not be enough natural gas to go around. And I think governments are not going to be silly enough to make natural gas available to the highest bidder. I think they will go ahead and ration it if they get to the point where they know that for certain there's not going to be enough natural gas to go around. So it is likely shaping up right now to be a very difficult period of time for Europeans continent-wide. And I think certainly there could be surprises. It could be a milder winter. There could be some more natural gas available from places that weren't anticipated. But for right now, it looks like it's going to be a tough time.
And now coal prices are soaring and global coal consumption is expected to return to record levels as the global energy crunch continues. Based on current economic and market trends, global coal consumption is forecasted to rise by 0.7% in 2022 to 8 billion tons. So are we moving backwards from this green energy agenda, or is all of that now on the back burner?
So we are in the midst of somewhat of a perfect storm that certainly wasn't predicted. What I mean by that is, first of all, global growth has continued. We may be in a recession worldwide right now, but in terms of just overall energy consumption, we've been headed higher. That hasn't taken a pullback, except for a pause during the COVID lockdowns. But nevertheless, overall global consumption is rising. So even without a bunch of the changes that I'll talk about in a second, we are going to see higher demand no matter what. And we haven't seen investment in energy, specifically fossil fuels, for quite some time, for two reasons. First of all, governments and government-controlled energy companies, from governments that are very environmentally focused, have somewhat prohibited or inhibited the investment in fossil fuel production over the past number of years. So we haven't seen production output rise. In addition, the public companies, or those companies that are owned by shareholders like the Shell and Exxon and Chevron, have seen shareholders pressing them for two things. First of all, more environmentally conscious investing in the business. And then secondly, not as much investment in increasing production, but with profits to go ahead and return those profits to shareholders in the form of dividends or stock buybacks. So we haven't seen production go up, but yet consumption worldwide has continued to go up. You layer on top of that now the environmental concerns worldwide, where governments are essentially paying either businesses or consumers to go ahead and either produce respectively or consume more green energy, solar, wind, hydropower, and so forth, rather than fossil fuel related energy sources. And so therefore you now have a real perfect storm. And so when we being the world, run out of energy availability, certainly from higher costing resources like environmentally friendly wind and solar and so forth, the reversion back is going to be to dirtier, and even in the case of coal, the most dirty of fossil fuels. And I don't expect that to stop anytime soon, unless we have either a very broad and deep recession, whereby energy consumption comes down for a while, or B, if there is a boost in energy production from where we sit right now, it doesn't seem like there's enough money going into energy production to really go ahead and tip the scale in the supply side of the equation.
How are European citizens now dealing with the rising cost of energy on top of the general inflation that is now affecting food and living costs? Currently, the inflation is almost at 9% in the EU.
So I think the lowest earning portion of society is struggling incredibly with inflation, because inflation hits all parts of the market, not only discretionary goods and services, but necessary and fundamental goods and services as well, like energy and food. And so they have much less discretionary income, if any at all, and they need to go ahead and cut back on even necessities. And that becomes difficult. And therefore, that's when you find that larger portions of the population fall into poverty. Right now, unemployment is at record lows, I think, all around the world. And so it's not about people not having jobs. It's them not earning enough at those jobs in order to go ahead and pay for the necessities of life. And if inflation, in terms of prices of necessities, is outpacing wage inflation, you will have increasingly more people falling into poverty. And then the knock-on effect of that, unfortunately, is you end up having a greater and greater divide between the lower end of the socioeconomic part of the population and the higher end. In a way, you know, the divide between the impoverished and the wealthy becomes a greater and greater amount because of that pricing pressure that the lower end has to go ahead and deal with in terms of the inflation and necessities.
How long is the energy market expected to remain tight like this? And how is this expected to be resolved?
Europe is different than the United States. We haven't seen here in the US an incredible spike in the same measure as Europe has seen. And we've seen gasoline prices, as a matter of fact, recently come down substantially. And so energy is not really the forefront of everybody's concern here in the US. In terms of Europe, I think it is quite different. And I think particularly in terms of natural gas, it is quite different because Russia is so important to many countries in Europe and the European Union. And secondly, natural gas, unlike gasoline, is not easily transportable. And so unless you have a pipeline already existing or you have a liquefaction plant already existing, the ability to go ahead and shift import sources is not very easy. And therefore, the crunch or the squeeze is likely to go ahead and remain longer, A, in Europe, and B, when it comes to natural gas versus gasoline. And in terms of specifically how long this will last, I actually think that this is a paradigm shift. Unless there's a resolution with Russia, I don't think that this is changing. Everybody should get used to these new prices and the fact that inflation with respect to energy prices is here to stay.
And now, why is nuclear not really talked about much anymore in terms of finding alternative energy sources? Isn't it one of the most efficient sources?
For sure, nuclear is an option. It's not an option that politicians like to talk about. There's two reasons. One is cost. They are very, very, very expensive to go ahead and construct. But the second thing, which is even worse, is the risks associated with any sort of catastrophe that could happen with respect to a nuclear power plant. A nuclear power plant meltdown is certainly much scarier and much more dangerous than an oil spill or a natural gas pipeline leak. So this is something that, you know, has been, I'd say, more so acceptable in Europe because of the lack of alternatives as opposed to the United States. Here in the US, we have not constructed a nuclear power plant in quite a long time, but in Europe is much more acceptable. But nevertheless, it is still something that politicians don't like to necessarily talk about because the people that live in the vicinity of those nuclear power plants are very much alarmed by the potential risk.
David Towell, founder of ProChain Capital, thank you so much for your time today. Now let's take a look at the cost of winter and what is the average cost consumers will be facing during these cold months. UK households have been warned that they could face a fresh cost of living crisis with the annual energy bill set to hit in excess of £3,600 this winter. This is hundreds of pounds more than previous predictions, and given the current levels of wholesale price, analysts believe that there is little sign that it will abate before 2024. And in Germany, customers with an annual gas bill of 1,500 euros today will see this figure shoot up to 4,500 euros and even more in the future as exchange prices have increased sevenfold in some cases. In Asia, China's efforts to secure energy supplies have achieved initial results, but coal production must be ramped up to ensure power capacity ahead of winter. China has introduced a series of policies to lower energy prices and ramp up coal production to reassure companies and the public. Meanwhile, electricity prices for coal power are allowed to rise 20% against the benchmark price. But in reality, the prices have surged to the highest ceiling in many provinces. In Australia, electricity prices went up 141% compared to last year, while the Australian government urged citizens to cut down on energy usage. And over in South Africa, the government authorized the power utility company Eskom to raise electricity prices by almost 10% till 2023. On the other hand, Asia is not afraid of winter. Countries like China, South Korea, and Russia are tackling the cold months by building power plants and gas pipelines. We'll have more after the break.
When all truths seem wrong, when all rules just don't hold. And a new world that is yet to shape out, disdain becomes the etiquette, and engagement equals betrayal. When so many find themselves worlds apart, we choose to look for common ground.
Only 41% of U.S. adults have enough savings to cover a $1,000 emergency.
We have record numbers of Americans who are on the verge of having their cars repossessed.
More than 137 million Americans are facing financial hardship because of medical debt.
In America, we do have a welfare system in place to help people who are struggling financially, but it's a conditional system. You have to prove to the government that you truly need help.
The simplest way that I can explain a basic income is that it's like Social Security for the rest of us. A basic income would be a monthly payment that would go to everyone.
That's $1,000 a month, no strings attached. I can use it however I would like. That means, I don't know, I just won't go crazy.
The reason that I am a fan of guaranteed income, because it is this idea that everybody is deserving just by virtue of your being here.
Welcome back to The Cost of Everything, where today we're talking about the cost of winter as energy prices are soaring. But not every country will pay that same cost. China and Russia are also in the final stages of building their first pipeline that can send gas from Siberia to Shanghai. This project, dubbed the Power of Siberia, began delivering natural gas to northern China in December of 2019 after working on it for 8 years. China is looking to diversify its energy sources as the country mainly still relies on crude oil. China and Russia have expanded their annual gas purchase agreement by 10 billion cubic meters and have discussed building additional pipelines. And in line with its diversification goals, both China and Russia are also collaborating and exploring the advantages of nuclear power. As a joint statement between the two nations said, "Friendship between the two states has no limits. There are no forbidden areas of cooperation. Strengthening of bilateral strategic cooperation is neither aimed against third countries nor affected by the changing international environment and circumstantial changes in third countries." This pipeline will be a complete game changer for the region, solidifying their mutual economic interests, as gas delivered by pipeline will be substantially cheaper than gas delivered via LNG. And in recent months, China has begun buying more Russian coal, which is now being sold at a discount on the world marketplace, as many other countries plan sanctions on the commodity. And once again, China is there to take the advantage of this good deal in order to strengthen the country's energy reserves. But what about diesel? Diesel can help to heat homes during the winter, and Asia has become a big exporter of diesel to Europe as it looks to reduce its Russian exposure. India and Chinese refineries, which normally export diesel to Europe, are on course to export 1.6 million barrels per day of diesel in September. That's up 1.4 billion barrels per day last month, and the highest since 2019. So it looks like Europeans are stockpiling diesel as it pulls back on its purchases from Russia. Let's bring in Serena Huang, who joins us here from Singapore. She's the head of APAC Analytics at Vortexa. Serena, has Asia always been a big diesel exporter to Europe, or is this the current situation with Ukraine and Russia that's prompted this shift?
Asia is traditionally what we call a marginal diesel exporter to Europe. Europe imports majority of its diesel primarily from Russia as well as the Middle East. Now, if you look at the geographical proximity, it makes sense because Russia and Middle East are much closer to Europe compared to Asia. So that makes their cargoes more attractive from an economic perspective as compared to Asia. Now, since the Russian-Ukraine conflict, what's interesting is that Russia's diesel exports continue to flow towards Europe at a level that is very similar to the pre-invasion period. We continue to see almost 50% of Europe's diesel imports coming from Russia. And, this actually signifies very, very healthy imports of Russian diesel barrels. But I believe that this dynamic is going to change, especially in the months ahead when the EU ban on Russian oil imports will kick in early next year. Now, a lot of the European traders will be sourcing for alternative diesel supplies from countries such as Middle East, Asia, particularly India, to replace the Russian diesel. But we need to make sure and we need to know that not one country is able to replace all of Russia's diesel supplies. So what this means is that Europe would have to get the alternative diesel supplies from several countries to have a complete replacement of all the Russian diesel barrels by early next year.
I see. Is Asia prepared for the winter? They're not necessarily known for a green agenda like Europe.
Exactly. So I think the biggest wildcard here that the market is not able to predict right now is how cold this winter will be. And meteorologists will have a better idea and a prediction of how cold the winter is probably months down the road. But nevertheless, several of the Northeast Asian countries that heavily depend on natural gas and coal supplies are already starting to purchase and plan for deliveries later into the quarter, just prepare for the winter itself. And because they expect that, you know, competition for natural gas, competition for coal will intensify, especially against the Atlantic Basin. So they are starting to stock up early to ensure that even if there is a coal snap, they all will be ready to handle. Now, at the same time, some of the other countries like Japan, they're thinking of alternative fuel supplies starting up their nuclear plants, which has been idled, in order to avoid any power shortage over the winter. And this is really interesting because it actually marks a shift in terms of sentiments. Previously, after the Fukushima disaster, they were pretty much against the idea of having nuclear power generation. But this time around, they have actually switched and started to become more in favor of using nuclear power generation as part of their energy mix. So definitely I would say that North Asian countries, they are leaving no stones unturned to ensure that they are well covered for this winter.
And do you think Asian countries like China and India are exporting diesel, but at the same time cutting down on domestic production and consumption? Or are they being coerced because this is the new green trend now?
Yeah, so China and India are two interesting countries. So let's talk about China first. Well, on the one hand, China's domestic demand has been really being beaten down this year as a result of COVID disruptions. Supply chain logistics, industrial manufacturing activities have very much been hampered as a result of the COVID lockdowns. But at the same time, the government is actually championing for a reduction in carbon emissions. And it is doing so by rationalizing the refining industry's capacities. And to do so, it has implemented measures such as restricting the crude import quotas, also cutting back on the product export quotas of refineries. So from that perspective, yes, it is true that the government is looking towards reducing the domestic production in China's diesel up until sufficient to meet the domestic demands itself. Now, India is an interesting case. India's domestic demand for diesel has recovered very strongly, especially after the COVID restrictions have lifted. And we see this in our data for the past couple of months. And although in the recent months, because of the monsoon season, domestic demand within the country has fallen a fair bit, but we expect that diesel demand within the country will rebound in the fourth quarter, especially fueled by the festive activities, festive season towards the end of the year. In terms of domestic production, diesel production in India has been very, very healthy. Refineries have been ramping up their refinery runs to near max capacities, because of the very strong margins. And I believe, you know, this is continuing. And as diesel margins continue to rise, that will give even more incentives for the Indian refiners to continue to ramp up their refining runs, especially towards the end of the year.
Such an interesting topic. Thank you so much, Serena Huang, for joining us today. When it comes to the cost of winter, there are winners and losers. Well, clearly, energy is the dominant theme, as it is the commodity that powers the growth of nations. So while the entire energy sector is winning, there is one that is making somewhat of a big comeback, and that is nuclear. In Germany, the country's three remaining nuclear power plants are scheduled to shut down at the end of 2022, the grand finale of a decade-long plan to end the use of atomic power in the wake of the Fukushima disaster. But now, driven by the shortage that it's facing, opposition against nuclear is softening. Recently, green politicians have signaled that they are prepared to keep nuclear power plants running for a few months longer, stretching the remaining fuel supply into spring to keep the lights on. There are concerns about safety when it comes to nuclear, but let's be honest. For Europeans, heating their homes with coal and wood, those alternatives aren't much safer. Burning solid fuels indoors is dangerous because it creates particulate matter small enough to get way down deep into people's lungs and even their bloodstream without being rejected by the body. And the buildup of that particulate can cause inflammation, asthma, low birth weight, pneumonia, cataracts, heart disease, and even lung cancer. So given this predicament, is human life and health the real cost of refusing oil and natural gas as heating sources? This idea of people burning wood in enclosed areas will cost lives in the short and long term. Thank you for watching. I'm Christy Ai, and I'll see you next time.